Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Tackle Empire.
Welcome back to Off Tackle Empire, the Off Tackle Empire podcast where we are discussing everything Big Ten, everything Midwest, absolutely all the time. Man, we should at some point resume that thing where we do this in person, because the dog interruptions have been very minimal. And
I think that's what most people tune in for. We're definitely costing ourselves, you know, ad revenue and page views and everything by not factoring the dogs into it more. Although we'd take our dogs to the vet today, and so they've been very depressed and demure since then. Apparently, thinking if they misbehave, we'll take them back and get them poked more.
My dogs have pretty much just kind of settled in and realized that they're going to be waiting around before anything else happens.
Yeah, plus my fiance is not here, and so R2 doesn't have anyone to protect from me, and Minnie's pretty chill most of the time anyway. So
yeah, thing is, Millie's not going to start barking at something unless Moon barks at something, because she can't smell the things that are outside. If she could smell them, she'd be barking at them constantly, but I have all the windows closed for that reason. Anyway, I'm Steve Braun with Andrew Krzyzewski, and we're here to talk about Nebraska. It's Nebraska week. We're mid-June when this comes out.
Yeah.
And, well, it could have gone worse, but it certainly could have gone better.
Yeah, that's fair to say. And that's honestly something we could say about really every team that we preview in June every year, which is to say, well, look, you weren't terrible. We didn't get to you in May, but yeah, it could have been better.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, they beat Penn State to drop them to what, 0-5?
I believe so, yes. I think that was basically the bottoming out moment. No, it had to be earlier than that, because it was Nebraska's fourth game.
Well, then they were on the receiving end of Lovie Smith's swan song.
Yeah, the Lovie Nova, if you will.
Yep. So, what do we have? I mean, I don't know what to make of this anymore. It just feels like it's just the Scott Frost era is struggling to cling to the rails.
Well, here's what. So first of all, two observations. First of all, recall, even if you're a Nebraska fan, recall how objectively funny it is that Nebraska was the school who made the most noise about, we want to compete. Our players want to get out there and just compete in the competition. And the Big Ten said, okay, go to the horseshoe first. That's objectively one of the most hilarious things that a sporting entity has ever done. I know if it happened to your team, it feels different, but you got to understand, to the rest of us, that shit's hilarious.
Yeah, and that really, you know, emotions were pretty high last year, and a lot of it didn't have to do with football because everybody was very emotional over many non-sports related things last year. I want to get really emotional about sports again. Of course, I didn't really have room to feel much of anything about football after the first game where, the very last embers of the Lovie Smith era died to a 19 for 20 something passing performance to tight ends and stuff. But the point is, I want people to be feeling, you know, terrible emotions, anxiety, anger, and all this stuff about football again. Come on.
Yeah, let's get back to where sports was just the thing that we put all of our negative feelings into, because it was there, and you know, it wasn't, and not everything else was terrible. So if you look at Nebraska's outcome last year, here's the impression I got, which was there's the season opening blowout against Ohio State, the surprising, again, amusing loss to Illinois, and then the rest of their games were really very much up in the air. And taking those two substantial losses aside, pretty much every other game was, I think they were all 10 points or less. I'm looking here, and yeah, that's right. So they had a 10-point win over Purdue, and everything else aside from those two we mentioned was a single score, and they went 3-3 in those games. So you've got a couple games where you're outmatched. Again, the Illinois thing was just what was an aberration, the likes of which I don't know how to explain. I don't know what to make of that. I really don't.
I can explain it like this, okay? I know it's a bit weird to think of Nebraska as a team that should win roughly half the game, since they've roundly failed to do that under Scott Frost, but they certainly got the talent to do so, right? Frost's coaching record suggests that he's capable of doing so. And so among those teams that you expect to be middling, they are far and away the most vulnerable to really stupid dick trip losses, right? Can you name me a team with greater volatility that should be in the middle of the pack?
No, not in the last couple of years of the Big Ten, no.
You would maybe
Maryland. But that wasn't really their result last year. So I other than the Maryland teams of the last couple of years, no, I really don't think so.
So like, you can't, like, they should absolutely beat Illinois this year, but they absolutely should have beaten them last year, especially since they wanted to compete so badly. They wanted to play much more than Illinois did.
Sure. And I'm just, you know, I go back and forth on whether to attribute any meaning to things that happened last year or not. Because I keep trying to tell myself, well, if I'm thinking about Northwestern, for example, I'm like, yeah, they won the division. Also, they lost to Michigan State. And also, what does any of that stuff mean relative to this year? So same thing for Nebraska. Yeah, they had a couple bad losses, one that was expected, one that should not have been. And a lot of other close games. Does that mean that they're a firmly middle of the pack team despite having top 4 or 5 in the conference talent?
My point is this: when under Scott Frost do they not have a loss that just makes the fans tear their hair out? How could this happen? How could this have happened? I don't understand. When have they not had that?
No point. That's been the feature of the Scott Frost tenure. So,
and God, blowing a huge lead to a pretty sizable lead to a forgettable Colorado team.
Yeah.
You know,
Didn't they lose both of the games in that series?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, yeah, every year there's been at least one result that, yes, I'm sure they're looking at it like, yes, like, how did it come to this? Look, there's a bright side to this too. From a talent position, especially on defense, they could be in much worse shape. They got a lot of guys taking the extra year. Ben Stille, Markel Diznuk, JoJo Doman, Will Honus, and Deontay Williams. So they've got a lot of guys coming back to a defense that was actually pretty decent for the most part, underratedly so, I think, last year. They've got continuity on that side of the ball. So things are a little more copacetic. Again, their overall numbers are going to be skewed by the fact that they gave up 52 to Ohio State and 41 to Illinois, which again is just fucking bizarre. but notwithstanding that scoring total, their yardage defense wasn't too bad in that game. And they've got a lot of pieces coming back from that. So their defense could be a strength. And they also add to that some pop with their freshman class. They've got the number 20 ranked class in the country, a couple of 4-star linebackers, and Randolph Kapai, and let me get the name right, Wyndon Ho'ohuli, who could both contribute right away. Not that they need linebackers to play immediately, but they're going to, you know, obviously the idea is eventually you are in a position where you not only have proven starters, but also depth. So on that side of the ball, they really should be pretty good. Where there's a lot more in the way of question marks is on the offensive side. And this has been the difficult to understand aspect of the Frost era, which is there are times when you can clearly see what they're going for here, and they're not, it doesn't feel like they're too far away from it, but then inevitably, inexorably, they make the big mistake, usually in the form of the turnover. And I don't know that that improves much next year, because so they had Luke McCaffrey transfer out, which resolves their quarterback debate about how, because
that's not necessarily a good thing
on offense, is they go back and forth. Neither quarterback is really good enough to firmly keep the job from the other. And now McCaffrey is gone. So you have to go with Adrian Martinez.
It felt like Martinez was the guy with the more big play upside, but he didn't, but McCaffrey took care of the ball better.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and again, to revisit Illinois and Nebraska, 5 turnovers to 0 turnovers.
Right.
And also they gave up 490 yards, but it started to turn into a time of possession thing, because again, they just couldn't stop giving up the ball.
Yeah. And the other thing, we mentioned this a couple times over the course of last season, which is that even when they had this dynamite combination of running backs in Dedrick Mills and Wandale Robinson, neither of whom they have this year, by the way, they were still like, they were giving more carries to their quarterbacks. I understand that part of that is just the reads the quarterback make, but they have one, they have a problem keeping their quarterbacks healthy, and two, the quarterbacks have a problem hanging on to the ball. Maybe you shouldn't be keeping the ball in their hands quite so often.
But when you got them as running backs, basically,
I understand that. And their receivers didn't really offer them a whole lot last year. But if it's not working, you got to tweak things a little bit. You got to get the ball in the hands of your bowling ball in Mills and your spark on the outside in Robinson. And now they've got the problem of they don't even have those options. They have to find other guys.
In their last 3 games against Illinois alone, they turned the ball over 11 times.
And granted, part of that is that the entire premise of the Lovie Smith defense is, well, cause the turnover.
It seems to be like a Pokemon elemental thing where that is super effective against Nebraska's offense.
You're weak against cover 2. So as we mentioned, Robinson transferring out for what turned out to be a family situation. That's not like a chemistry on the team thing issue. Dedrick Mills is gone. Luke McCaffrey is gone. So now Adrian Martinez is under all this pressure, and they're also shuffling the deck at wide receiver because they have Marcus Fleming out, Cade Warner out, a couple of tight ends, Jared Buback and Kurt Rofdahl are both out. So they have Omar Manning, who they brought in last year, who was like the top rated JUCO receiver in the country, I believe, or if not, then, you know, in that atmosphere. They're bringing in another transfer this year in Samori Dure from Montana, you know, well-known talent pipeline, and making his making sort of his Keith Van Horn turn late in his career, just seeing how many jerseys he can collect. Oliver Martin will walk on for Nebraska after a career which has taken him so far to Ann Arbor and Iowa City as well. So those are, again, they're shuffling the deck. Like, again, the receivers who were here last year are gone. New group there. They're going to be looking for a new guy in the running back group. Ronald Tompkins just transferred out, I think either today or yesterday as we're recording this. So you'll get, by the time you listen to this, it's a couple weeks old and things may have changed, but USC import Marquis Stepp is probably going to be the guy running back, at least as the starter. This is a system that calls for a couple of running backs, so they're going to need to find another guy. Marvin Scott III might be a decent option there. Here's the overall impression I have of this team right now, which is this is a team that's in need of some good vibes. You know, the season opener is no longer in Ireland, although I did also see that now they're scheduling another Ireland game for 2022 against Northwestern. So they're just going to try it again and apparently assume that well, they've got the most Irish Catholic coach in the conference. So for sure, this time the game will go through as scheduled. It feels like this is a program where it couldn't hurt for them to keep a lower profile. And it's been a quiet offseason for them, at least here outside of their media markets. But it just feels like every time anything noteworthy happens to this program, it's just something that we end up making fun of them for later. You know, the hoodie thing while wearing a hoodie, the commenting on Indiana stupid, and then losing to Indiana. What's that?
Objectively stupid.
Yeah. Like it's just it. And maybe he's learned something, you know, maybe there's been a little bit of humility. Maybe there's been a little bit of reflection and you know, able to get back to a more normal off season.
I mean, they're just diving into
the coaching and they're leaving the press conference bits for when they actually do something.
Yeah. If you're a Nebraska fan, you gotta be hoping this guy just like shuts up for a bit and just actually does something. Like, you know, at the very least,
that he at least doesn't say something that pisses off an opponent who is then in a position to rub your face in it. Because that's happened a few times.
Well, you know, this seems ridiculous to say again, but how important is this season opener at Illinois?
Very. Lose to a retooling.
Lose Brett Bielema's first game. How about that?
Yeah, don't do that. Don't like, do that.
That, again, this is the season where it's like, all right, you know, I know we've been drunk a lot, but we're focused. You know, we've got experience here. We're not going to be making the same mistakes. So you got to beat the team that epitomized your mistakes last year.
That particular demon should be pretty easy to get rid of.
Yeah. And it's a game where they should have a decided talent advantage.
For sure.
But you know, it feels like Brett Bielema is actually prioritizing winning this year. So who knows? He could have the advantage of they don't have the schemes on film. So
that's true. And because, yeah, look, if you lose that Illinois game, it does not matter what you do the following 2 weeks. You are not going into that road trip to Norman with anything resembling confidence. I don't care if you outscore Fordham and Buffalo, your weeks 2 and 3 opponents, by 150 to nothing.
I don't know what they could possibly do that would make me think that they would do anything other than get absolutely, you know, burned to the ground and the earth salted where they once stood.
The only thing is, I don't know what exactly the status of the matchup between Nebraska and Oklahoma is. I know
they're trying to get out of it. It's hard for me to blame them, honestly.
This is not what you need in a situation
like this.
Hard pass on playing Oklahoma this year if you're Nebraska, in my opinion. I get that that's a matchup that you miss. I get that that makes you long for the days when things, frankly, were better for Nebraska when you were playing Oklahoma regularly. I don't think that still playing them regularly would do anything for you, nor is this matchup in this season going to improve your fortunes at all. That's not a game you should want.
Because the fact of the matter is, this schedule is brutal. It's hard to imagine a much worse schedule for a Nebraska team in desperate need of a bowl game.
Just
a bowl game. They desperately need to make a bowl game this year.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are we even doing?
If you were to swap out the Michigan State trip for Penn State or Indiana, it could be a little tougher. But other than that, your cross division matchups are Michigan and Ohio State, and you host both of those teams. But still, that's accounting for the fact that you've got a West Division schedule against teams that basically, with the exception of Illinois, every Big Ten West opponent Nebraska is going to face this year fits into one of two categories. They're either markedly better than you, or their coach is also kind of desperate. And you can figure out for yourself which category those opponents fit into. There's a couple teams that sort of fit into both categories. It's a difficult schedule. And boy.
Because it feels like, honestly, I think there's a better chance of them beating Ohio State than Oklahoma. I really do. I feel like that could be a game where Oklahoma just decides, like, hey, let's get Spencer Rattler some Heisman hype here.
Well, isn't it the case, though, that Oklahoma's defense can sure be scored on? I mean, yeah, I could see a scenario where Nebraska runs for 400 yards against them as a team. I could,
but I could also see a situation where that means that they put up like 24 points to Oklahoma 70.
I don't think that follows. I don't necessarily get your point there, but
Because they run up tempo. They do. Nebraska generally does a pretty up tempo offense, and that has the effect of maximizing Oklahoma's possessions. And
yeah, Oklahoma's like not exactly running, you know, 3 yards of cloud of dust run down the play clock. I mean, the same is true for them, I would think. I'm not disputing that Oklahoma is a vastly better team than Nebraska, but I see more of a road to making that game competitive than the Ohio State game. I think Ohio State's going to run away.
Well, I mean, we're splitting hairs here. They're going to lose both of those games probably pretty horrifically, like in a horrifying manner. Sure. I don't see them beating Wisconsin on the road. I'd be very surprised if they beat Iowa. Of course, that's the thing where if you're Nebraska, you're thinking, God, can we possibly beat Iowa? And, you know, because it's been a while, but.
Well, sure. But we also generally go into that matchup thinking, oh, this is going to be a bloodbath. And it's been close the last couple of years, has it not? I know last year was a one score game. I recall thinking this before. Yeah, 2019, they lost by 3. Last year, they lost by 6. 2018, they lost by 3. No, this
actually, yeah,
it's been a series of Iowa wins, but it's not like Iowa's been running them over. You know, those have been Kirk Ferentz wins.
Northwestern is Northwestern, whatever. Who knows? Whatever you think about that game is probably wrong. Other than that, it'll be stupid. Got it. Again, talk about a team with vastly superior talent with a similarly desperate head coach. How about Michigan?
Yeah, how about Michigan? How about Purdue?
Yeah.
Minnesota, I don't think, has the desperate coach, nor do I think they really have a big talent advantage either way there. Anyway.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little too down on them, but it definitely hurts to have the Illinois and Minnesota games be on the road. Because those are two games that, yes, I'm willing to say that Minnesota is a game they stand a chance of winning. Illinois is obviously a game that everybody stands a chance of winning, probably a pretty good one. And those are games that you just wish you had the extra edge of being at home just to, you know, just to make sure. I mean, Northwestern kind of doesn't matter where or when you play them as long as you're not Ohio State.
Yeah, hang on a second, though. I'm going to look at something because you say that, and yet I'm looking at Illinois' schedule and the ticket prices that they have listed for every game, and the most expensive ticket, according to ESPN, is the road trip to Penn State. But as far as the home games go, tickets for Nebraska are already starting at $77.
Yeah, for an Illinois football game. So that's all Nebraska fans.
Yeah, right. And so you say, well, you'd rather have Illinois at home. And I'm kind of like, well, would they? Because remember, this is the fan base in the conference. You can count on to show up wherever the game is. So anyway, I don't know if I would quite agree on that aspect, but look, that's definitely a game you want to win. No question. about that.
We're not going to fill our stadium. So if you want to do it for us, you know, bully you. Maybe we can actually afford to keep all of our basketball assistants the next time we get a one seed.
Maybe so. We'll leave it at that. Speaking of basketball.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hoo boy, that did not go well, did it? We've got some numbers here just to run past you. This is a very analytical, data-driven podcast, so let us present the numbers, and they will tell the entire story. Fred Hoiberg, first two seasons in Lincoln, is off to a 14-45 start overall. That's good for a .237 win percentage.
Well, 23.7.
You fucking pedant. There's some extenuating circumstances, to be sure, especially as far as last season goes. Nebraska had a COVID pause, and then after they got back from that, the conference decided, oh no, you're getting all these in. And so they had to play 15 games in 32 days to end their season.
It's interesting how that works and how those standards are applied.
Such a farce.
One where they just went to Maryland to play two games in two nights? Like, yeah, they went to Maryland, played a game, stayed there so they could play another game against Maryland the next day.
And I'm like, why don't you just play, like, just make it a baseball series. Let's just play a four-pack, have one of them as a matinee, you know, a getaway game sort of thing.
Played Illinois three times.
Yeah, because after all, these are amateur athletes. We can't very well make them play every day because they have to get to class between the two away games at Maryland in the course of a week. Just utterly preposterous situation that the conference put Nebraska's players in last year.
They underperformed even given that.
Yes. And just think about that record to this point and consider the kind of turnaround it would take for Nebraska to even get to a .500 record next year. And then assume that they can do that, keeping in mind the jump that's going to take. And then ask yourself how long it's going to take Hoiberg to get to an overall winning record. And then ask yourself how long it's going to take him to get to a conference winning record. Because in the Big Ten in those first 2 years, Nebraska's gone 5-34.
Yeah, he'd have to have the two best seasons in Big Ten history back-to-back to get over .500.
Yeah. And this is all in the backdrop of a roster wheel that's churning as fast as ever. I believe this is still accurate. So players who are out. Teddy Allen, that was a midseason thing. That happened like 4 days after he dropped 41 points. They also lose Akola Rapp, Ivan Wiedraoga.
Talk about taking profit. Teddy Allen was like, all right, my stock is up a little bit. That's going to cash this out for a nice 20% gain. You know, you never go broke by taking profit early.
Right. Whereas Thorjarnarsson, meanwhile, is just diamond hands to the moon through this, you know, whole transition. Those guys are out. And then Elijah Wood also transfers, presumably to Barrett Brewer Tech.
This always makes me laugh.
That being said, they do have a serious incoming infusion of talent, however. In terms of incoming transfers, you've got shooting guard CJ Wilcher from Xavier and wing Keon Edwards from DePaul. They also have their best recruiting class in terms of prep prospects ever by a huge margin. First ever five-star in Nebraska history, Bryce McGowans. Yes, younger brother of Trey, who was on the team last year and is coming back. And then also a top 100 center, Wilhelm Breidenbach, who on his own would, I believe, be like the third or fourth best recruit they've ever had. They have a JUCO wing in Kaisei Tominaga coming in. And then another center, Oleg Kohanets, that's probably going to be a little bit more of a project. We mentioned, of course, Trey McGowans is back. Kobe Webster is taking a senior year.
God, this team has amazing names. I mean,
yeah, man, they're, no, it's I mean, pretty good. It's pretty good. But look, there's a way to see that, okay, this team is going to have considerably more talent than either of the first two squads that Hoiberg has had. All those guys we just mentioned, plus they still have Shamil Stevenson, still have Wat Mayen, still have Derek Walker, who emerged as a post presence for him last year. That's a pretty decent nucleus, but the thing is, they're still going to be small. They're going to need those two freshman centers to play and be pretty good unless they go small ball almost exclusively. And again, given this is Fred Hoiberg, that's a definite possibility.
Here's a rebound by Wilhelm Breidenbach, and he kicks it out to Thor Bjarnason, who fires for three, and it's off. It's going to be rebounded by Oleg Koyunets.
Yeah, again, like the only regret here is that they lost the gooey dragon, Widraoga. But
and Elijah Wood. I mean,
yeah, no, it's
that's a good compliment.
But look, it speaks to the depth they've cultivated on their all-name team. When you can lose Gooey Dragon and Elijah Wood and Thorir Arneson in one season and still probably have the best entries, still probably have the best unit from that perspective in the conference. But yeah, if there's basically two scenarios here, either the freshman centers are ready to go and are, you know, serviceable, and that's probably their best case scenario, or they're not ready to go but play anyway, or they're not ready to go and so they go small ball. Two of those three scenarios, probably the more likely, result in Nebraska being extremely easy to score on in the interior again. This is a team that was pretty rough defensively. With the amount of talent he's got in this particular spin of the wheel, I think it's more likely that they're good this year than it was the last two. But look, at this particular go-around, they've got way more talent than they did the last 2 years. That's the thing that you keep in mind if you're a Nebraska fan, is you sort of put the first 2 years out of your mind and assume that it was all leading up to this, that this is the group, this was the year that he was building towards. Not that you've got any proof of that on the court, but that based on the talent you have on paper, things are going to be better.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, everything about Fred Hoiberg, Nebraska being competitive is theoretical right now. And there is a consensus in the scientific community that it is definitely possible, but we're talking entirely theoretical right now.
Not something that's been observed, at least certainly not on the court, because God damn, they were bad.
The conditions are as good as they're going to get, right? The only thing that's going to get better than this is experience, which is not nothing, but you got to feel like even without experience, they can definitely be the best Fred Hoiberg Nebraska team right away.
Not that that's going to take much.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, because the bar is so low, they just, with a talent infusion like this, if they aren't better, then frankly, you fire Hoiberg and you don't even think twice about it.
Yeah. They probably won't, but if he has another season like they did these first two, that's fireable. That absolutely will be fireable.
But I mean, like, you go 5-15, that's enough to keep it. But you do what we've been doing with more talented players, and then they transfer out. Like,
that's a real
get out of here. Take your clown shoes and squeak your way out of here. Take your clown shoes on that very polished basketball court and squeak loudly out the door.
I have a good call it there.
All right. I mean, how fucking clown shoes would that be?
They got some real talent, man. They really should be good.
Yeah. Yeah, they should be they should at the very least be a lot more interesting.
Oh, dude, at times, they were compellingly interesting.
That is true.
Were not good.
That's why I shied away from saying anything like they should be more competitive, because they were kind of competitive. They just lost all the games.
Yeah, and I mean, they won't have to play 15 in a month again.
They're not going to have to play a one seed three times.
Yeah. Fuck, Huh. All right, man. Well, good talking to you. Take it easy.
Yep. See you around.
Take it easy.
See you. Well, definitely see you next week.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, let me know if things change for Saturday. But
yeah, doesn't seem like they will.
All right. Deuces.
Later.
Your source for Big Ten Talk. It's Off Tackle Empire.